Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. And today is episode 181 with the title Beyond Reflection Towards Belonging. And I have the absolute honour and privilege to welcome Gillian Russell. Gillian is the CEO of Beyond Reflections, who champion mental well-being and inclusion by empowering the younger generation with chances the older generations never had. And when I asked Gillian to describe her superpower, she said it is giving younger people those opportunities her generation was. Hello, Gillian. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
It's been a, tough day at the office. Day at the office. 16th of April, 2025. And we had the Lord Chief Justices of the Supreme Court of the United Kingdom rule on the definition of woman. And that, as a trans woman, that affects me. And without wishing to out you any further, affects us both in some way.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been a tough day.
It has. It has. It's been one of those days. It's not unexpected, I suppose, but it's still a kick in the guts, really, isn't it? That's the trouble.
Brutal is the word I would use.
It is brutal, but not unexpected. And I think the problem has been, if I may say, is that, in my view, how can I put this? I don't know that we've done enough to A, protect the freedoms we had, to protect the rights we have. I don't know if we've done enough to take enough action quickly and effectively enough. I don't know, because we're such a diverse community, as a group of transgender people under that huge umbrella, it's hard to get everybody to come together. You know, I sit in meetings with CEOs and other structures in the trans health space, and I listen to people talking, and just sometimes I just wish, can we just do something? And I think you know, there's an orange man in the White House at the moment, and he has proven one thing above all. For me, it's something which has been my mantra all my life. It's not what you do, it's how fast you do it. And if you're going to make change happen, you do it fast. And that means that things happen. And I just think we spent a lot of time consulting, coordinating, thinking, policy making, pontificating. And I understand why, get me wrong, because of course, you know, but there's this idea that we have to have everybody on the same train, all going in the same direction, whatever that train is and where the tracks are. Sometimes I think, and I'm looking at myself, by the way, Joe, you know, I think this is really important. People like myself, the elders in the community, as it were, and I'm proud to say I'm older than you, so I can call myself a true elder. If I'm older than you, that is something, isn't it? But, you know, we've not pressed hard enough. And I think we fought so hard to get the rights we had, and then we sat down and thoroughly celebrated them. And then we sort of went to sleep and we just assumed that was all ours. And I think what we've seen in the States is that erosion of a democracy. And I think we're seeing it in the UK. And I think we're seeing, you know, the big picture, a big political movement against trans people for all sorts of different reasons. But in the day to day, you know, it's always the case, isn't it, that who really cares about this decision? It's about 25 people with a particular agenda. Sorry, it's probably maybe 250 people with a particular agenda. And of the other 79.75 million people in this country, no one gives a monkey's about it, apart from us who are severely disadvantaged by it. And that's the trouble with this. That's the trouble with this, really. But we don't want to talk all day about this, because that's just moaning and pitching. No, that was just the, that's quite just like opening salvo.
It's a car crash on the way to work, I guess, probably the best way of describing it.
Yeah. And, you know, what's really brilliant about it, it does two things. It polarizes people, doesn't it? So you have people, I was on LBC this morning chatting, and I had someone called Graham who rang in to say, Gillian with a bloke's voice. What's the reason this is important is for the protection of our species. And I think, great, yeah, because I'm single-handedly not doing my bit to help the, you know, the carry on of the species having fathered children in the past. So, you know, my job is done here, both as a man, as a woman.
Was that Nick Ferrari you did, was it?
No, it was on James O'Brien, part of the phone-in thing.
Yeah, I did GB News this morning.
I'm sure you did. You live on there now, don't you?
I don't know. You can't live there. It's far too toxic and soul-destroying. But yeah, I was sat in the green room or on Zoom waiting to go live, and I just listened to the two presenters. They were just piling on the bigotry, the bias, the anti-trans rhetoric. And it was just like, by the time I got on there, I was feeling kind of unclean and dirty. And then they had someone outside the court in Scotland who was basically celebrating from one of the board of a Sex Matters charity. And they were euphoric. And it was kind of, and I was trying not to be too doom and gloomy, but just be very practical. You know, we've got to accept the decision. We've got to work out what it means. Today is a day for reflection. Tomorrow is a day to regroup. And re-establish. You know, I still have a gender recognition certificate. I'm a certificated woman, according to the judge. I may not be a biological woman, and I never claimed to be a biological woman, but I'm legally, for all intents and purposes, a woman. I'm just not covered under the Equality Act, under the sex protection.
And let's be That's really clear changed. About this. What we need to do is look back in 6 months' time and say and see how the figures of rapes, crimes, violence against women have dramatically dropped because all of these transgender women are being excluded from these spaces. It is ludicrous. But what it shows is that well-funded, well-invested, well-organized small groups of people can make a big impact. And we can do that. And that's why I keep sort of, you know, we have great allies out there. We have advocates who speak passionately on behalf, you know, Joe Lysa, David Tennant, we've got good people out there, and we're just not joining the dots to bring it all together and make that process work. And, you know, that's what we have to do. Simples.
But isn't the problem, we're not really a community.
No, we're not.
We're a group of people who share a characteristic.
Yes.
But we're so diverse, so disparate, so intersectional. We're not really a community. And even organized within...
Organized as a community. But yeah. We are a community, I would say. But I remember Bobby Pickard saying this in Trans in the City, you know, we don't have a hut. We don't have a badge. We don't have a flag that we all... Which is funny because we do have all those three things. But you're absolutely right. We don't... And we don't have people who, dare I say, have been in the commercial world enough to understand how large-scale change management lobbying works in the real world. We like lots of people, isn't it? We've got a lot of people running this sort of community interest companies who have come from that community. We don't have people who've maybe got the breadth of experience you and I have of being in the corporate world and managing huge changes and understanding how do you get a government to change and understanding, you know, if you've got 1,000 people heading in one direction, how do you change that really quickly? And all of this can happen. Just needs some. Hold the first meeting, I always think. And I've offered.
Well, if you look through the Sex Matters and looked at the who's who there on their website, and they have people on their board who are specifically targeted at lobbying MPs and ministers and people like that. They have someone deliberately working with the Met press and media to get that stories. We don't have that. We don't have an advocacy charity.
We used to. I mean, Press for Change used to be that organization, wasn't there? And we didn't have the forces against us in that time. But I'm actually genuinely, what's the word? I mean, I'm cross. I'm angry. I'm frustrated. I'm bloody mad, actually. But I'm actually quite optimistic as well, because there comes these points in the road where what they've done is this, they've said, right, it's this. So now we know what we're dealing with, because since 2010, it's been anything. And no one's knowing what they're dealing with. Now, we might not like the result we've got, but now we know what we're fighting against. And actually, it's better to have a fight against something than half a fight against lots of different things. And what's important for us now is that we're a wedge piece of, this is a wedge piece of legislation against all marginalized communities. And, you know, we have to get others, those marginalized communities, to stand by, behind us and with us, because there's also already attacks on gay marriage. And this is, you know, Project 2025. I had the joy of reading all 900 pages at one point. This is all written down. This is actually a plan. This is not someone, you know, actually sort of making up as goes along. This is a well-considered, well-thought-out, well-funded, well-organized plan. And we can do the same. I'm very hopeful. Let's get to it.
Yeah, we just got to come together. I think you're right. But yeah, we said in the green room before we went live here that we weren't going to spend the entire episode talking about this. So yeah. We've done a bit of a prelude, and we got it off our chests, and we've kind of screamed at the world and committed it to tape. But Gillian, tell us a bit more about what your real passion is in your other life, if you like.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because being very old, even older than you, as we said, I mean, I've had a number of different careers, and not just working for Beyond Reflections. I'm the chair of Support You, which is a LGBT charity up in Thames Valley. And I'm the host of Transvox, which is a campaigning podcast such as your own, but specifically in the trans world and trying to, you know, making change happen in the trans world with a colleague of mine, as well as working in Beyond Reflections. So I've always said that because I left it so late to transition. I look at some of the younger people who come along behind and say, it's a real, I want those people to have what I didn't have. Now, what I didn't have is through my own choice, and sometimes because of a lack of opportunity and knowledge and time and resources and such like. But you see, when I started out, and maybe you're the same, we didn't have the word transgender. We didn't really talk about identity as a psychological construct. We didn't really talk about, certainly didn't talk about gender identity. We had, you know, I come from the northeast of England, and if you were wearing women's clothing, were you just seen as a pervert? And there was no concept or construct. I mean, we had that, documentary about the person that was born in the wrong body. And, you know, I remember that being discussed. And I think, you know, the youngsters today, they've got the language, they've got evidence, they've got science, they've got all sorts of things which are there to be able to make things work for them. And I think it's, you know, the job of us elders to be able to facilitate for that next generation, the opportunity, but also the skills on how to fight and how to lobby and negotiate and do the things that we've done. Because arguably, trans people are very resilient, but also they're not at the same time. They're very vulnerable. So it's about how we transfer those skills. Now, I was lucky. I remember when I was very young, a conversation with my uncles, actually. And my uncle was a very large man. He'd just come back from Poland, working in the steelworks in Poland. Steelworks, remember those? And he was sitting, he used to work for Swan Hunters, the people that made the tanks in the war. And he was sitting there, and I used to be a musician. I used to play a musician, play music. And I used to say to him, E, because we always say E at the beginning, everything in Geordie land. He's a funny un. But at least he's not a Tory.
There are worse things, aren't there, than being trans? And I always think, and this is no disrespect to any of my friends or anybody that listens to this, but I'd rather be trans than a Morris dancer or a Tory. And sorry, that's not meant to be anybody in.
That's very funny. And it is interesting, though, isn't it? It's interesting that, you know, I have met trans people in the Reform Party and in the Tory Party. And it's that lovely idea. So your point about not being a community, isn't it? We don't need to be cut from the same place. The point about our, you know, the trans existence is that it's separate to our lives. It's possible to have views which are not linked to being transgender the whole time. So I suppose I was lucky, you see, because I grew up in the arts world. So I had gender dysphoria, but didn't know it was gender dysphoria. I was often caught, you know, dressing in clothes, female clothes, not knowing that was a bad thing. Remember coming to London and going to Transformation, you know, like I'm one of those people that went to the old place on Euston Road, you know, that was great. Used to see the adverts and used to come down. You used to have to make a phone call from the call box around the corner. And I was about 13, 14 coming down to Newcastle from Newcastle to London to have music lessons and such like. And then, you know, sort of trying to experiment with this. But at least the arts, and I've also been a big fan of the arts, and I also think lots of trans people come from the arts and they come from IT as well. Being in the arts gave me that ability to express yourself through music. And of course, that was marvelous because I wasn't able to express myself with words because the words sort of didn't exist at that time. And I mean, at the time, you know, we're talking, I remember a friend of mine I was at music college with who committed suicide because, you know, gay rights weren't even a thing really back then. You know, early set it was You know, it was, I can't remember when gay homosexuality was decriminalized, can't remember it, but there's a huge amount of, you know, negativity around the whole thing. So the idea of being transgender was just nowhere. So I think it's been a classic story of you find your way, you understand yourself. I mean, how many people we met in the military have tried to deny it themselves, you know, had to try and fight against it, got married, have children, all that sort of stuff, you know, try to deny it themselves. I mean, a lot of people who I meet who are trans say, I wish I wasn't. Wouldn't life be easier not being transgender? People don't understand this who aren't transgender. I remember sitting recently and saying in a board meeting, you know, I sit here now and I used to have white male privilege. And whatever I said, whatever it was, people just listened to it and go, oh, I used to suck their teeth and say, that's very profound. And then a woman would say something and it was, ah, and then a transgender person says that, and they're sort of saying, oh, are you a she or a they? And it's like, it's just not the conversation. And it's like we lose our, this, you know, this idea of crossing identities is very, very powerful. And, you know, it's, which is something that's fascinating. But I think having a world for me built in the arts gave me this access, especially from the Northeast. It gave me access to people from different classes, different aspects, different journeys, you know, and it was a marvelous thing. It was true inclusivity. And, you know, because actually what you're trying to do is to produce a performance and no one cares. After a while, there was quite a lot of sexism at the time, but no one cared after a while whether, you know, what you were, who you were, or where you come from. It just mattered that was a great performance. I say that as if it's true. I mean, clearly there was a lot of untruth sitting behind that, but, you know, that was really what it's all about. I was in the freelance world as well. So freelance players, you were either up to it or you weren't. And so, you know, it's been a founding part of my life. Before I went into commerce, and even in commerce, I've always understood and had that sort of musical brain, being able to see the world differently. I mean, I now think, you know, neurodiversity, I think Howard Gardner talked about this idea of multiple intelligence is a slightly erroneous thing, but musical intelligence is quite an interesting concept, and musical language and such like, for those who have it. So I've always been able to see the world differently. And to a certain extent, I think I thought that explained being trans, because I already looked at the world differently. I already used to think that everybody used to look at the mirror and think, well, I'm this. And I look in the mirror and think, who's that? I thought I don't know whether you had that experience. It's peculiar, isn't it? Just seeing a person you want being reflected back. Well, who is that? It's like when you watch cats. So don't you see cats in the looking in the mirrors and the sort of, you know, that thing where they jump into the air. And I spent a lot of time doing that.
Yeah, I probably only became hyper aware of that mirror image at the point when I was transitioning, I guess, and the dysphoria, you know, I was okay here, but it's down that bit in the middle where you just didn't see the reflection of the somebody who you believed you were on the inside. I could handle it looking at a bloke when I was a bloke, sort of thing. It didn't bother me, but it was when I was embarking on my transition, I was hyper aware, imposter syndrome, passing a test, not being good enough for anybody, who am I kidding, all that kind of dysphoric self-loathing kicked in. And it's only when I was able to break away from that self-loathing and that focus on what I looked like, because actually that became irrelevant. Actually, what I looked like was not irrelevant at all. How I felt and loved myself. And that's when I focused on that. It doesn't matter what you think of me, whether you criticize me, you slag me off, you don't like my voice, whatever it may be. That's not relevant. It's what's in my heart and my soul and my being. That's the important
thing. Who you are. The root of you. And I think sometimes I genuinely envy some of the young members of the trans population, because members, you know, just younger people, because they've not grown up with those sort of stereotypical roles, lots more gender fluidity. There's lots more accept. I mean, you know, people used to be out there in my world if you had a purple shirt on with big collars. Now, I mean, people come in wearing the most amazing clothes and you look at them and think, that's incredible, because societal breakdown has happened around fashion and those sorts of things. And I think the traditional idea of what a woman and a man looks like has broken down. This has allowed, I think, the non-binary community to sort of go, ah, okay, that makes a lot of sense, because I'm none of those things. And, you know, that's been a really wonderful opportunity for people to to think about that, whether they're always a non-binary or the move from one side to the other, or, you know, it's part of a path, whatever that might be. I think being non-binary is very misunderstood, possibly because it is that concept, which is, it's not this, rather than being a something, which is very clear.
Yeah, it's absent rather than a positive statement.
Yes, it's like a vacuum, isn't it? It's like, you know, well, okay, yeah. I know that's not, hasn't got that in, but what is it? What is it you are rather than what is it you're not? And I saw a good old J.K. Rowling launching her Seven Penneth Worth into the conversation about agender people on a website. And, you know,
yeah.
There you go.
Asexual people, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. Confusing sexuality and gender again, as usual, but there you go.
Well, there's this person, one of the presenters on GB News this morning, pontificating about the fact that now they don't have to pander to people who use they-them pronouns.
Yeah.
We know it's all rubbish. It's like, yeah. No, yeah, you're just extrapolating BS from you, yeah, from this. Yeah, it doesn't That's weaponize true. It, doesn't empower you.
No, but you see, I was talking to someone and talking to Jenny, a colleague of mine, who was who's a big YouTube fan on the podcast, and it's something I've talked about for a long time. And I remember a couple of the tech bros talking about this idea of woke scolding, this idea that you're talking down to people, telling them this is not right and that's not right. And I've been a huge advocate of removing all that. And, you know, what you're saying is, I don't want to be treated differently. I want to be treated the same as everybody else. And I'm not going to get bent out of shape for some of these things, because I understand it takes you time to understand, because you've got limited intelligence and, you know, that's hard. And I get that. And one of the things I think is, we have spent a bit too much time focusing on the wrong things. I do think we spend too much time talking down to people. I don't think we've actually, I always like to say this, if you took our community and looked at the ROI from our community in the performing arts and the soft power of the UK in the IT world, for goodness sake, we would be a significant community in terms of impact. No one talks about that. No one talks about the part we play within LGBTQIA umbrellas. No one talks about the impact of those people. And if they do, they don't talk about it enough in a way that people get. And I think for me, this is your point about not being a community. We never sit down, do we, and think, well, actually, what are we worth? Not just individuals, but what are we actually worth in the UK economy? We're worth a lot. I mean, how many IT firms would grind to halt if we took our transgender people out of out of coding? Nothing would be flying for a while, would it?
Well, certainly gender queer, gender fluid, gender expansive people. Yeah, the whole spectrum.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our communities. Yeah.
And I think that's the point, isn't it? The point is, we need to stand up for ourselves. We need to bring this evidence together. You know, one of the things in the arts funding at the moment is they're saying things like, well, actually, if you invest £1 into the arts community, you get something like £3,000 or £4,000 back into the cultural zeitgeist. And I mean, so that's the argument, isn't it? So invest, because actually you're going to get a return on investment. The issue is, how quickly does that return come? Okay, it's not quick enough. Let's figure out how we get that to return fast enough. Now we've got a different conversation. We're not saying we shouldn't. We're just saying, how do we do it? And I think this is the thing that's being missed again in our community. I'm not, by the way, suggesting that this is a piece of work we need or should be doing, but it's that sort of commercial thinking about the world. It's about how we lead, how we manage, how we develop, how we think about cultures. It's about we can become so protective, we don't give people the tools to be able to have robust conversations. We can remove people and say, I remember someone asking me a question at a speaking event, and one of the facilitators on the panel, it was something quite innocuous, saying that's hate speech, is anti-trans. I said, it's not hate speech and not anti-trans. A, I'm not offended because I haven't chosen to be. But actually, it's coming from a place where you're finding out. When he wasn't calling me something, he was asking. And I think this is the thing, isn't it? We run the risk of closing down arguments. We run the risk of being vulnerable to the extent that we don't actually educate and inform people. And a lot of people, once they're educated and informed, are quite okay with it. I mean, it's a classic piece of research, isn't it? Once you've met a trans, if you don't like trans people, A, you've probably met one, never knew. But if you have met an explicit trans person, your opinions about trans people completely change at the end of it.
Yeah, I think we've tried to create, people accuse us of having an ideology. And I think to a certain extent, we've created language that seems complex. We're forcing people to conform to our way of thinking. As a minority, we're trying to influence the majority. And it's, I think sometimes what we probably need to do is be more tolerant ourselves.
I totally agree.
And learn to navigate a world where we're not the majority, we're not the default, and therefore we have to figure it out. And you know, no minority ever wants to fit here that they're not included. But sometimes we have to work at it. And I think, I know, if we attack people, your argument here, if we go there with pitchforks, people tend to put the barricades up. So how do we lower the drawbridge? How do we get people to sit around the table and have conversations? And that's what we've lacked.
I think that's absolutely right. I think it's that a classic thing, isn't it? You've got to understand the other person's perspective. Now, I've listened to the TERF, what we call TERF stuff. We listened to their extreme feminist argument. Do you know what? They're pretty right. They've fought for many, many years to get the rights of women to be where they are. And then they suddenly find them swept away because, as they see it, a bunch of blokes dressed in frocks are going to come along and get their rights. I mean, I think I'd be a bit hacked off about that as well. And I don't think we've thought clearly enough about that. There's been a heck of a struggle for 30, 40, 50 years, you know, at a visceral level. I don't mean visceral. I mean at a really fundamental level for women to get. I mean, I remember my mother in 74, whatever it was, having to go get open a bank account and having to have my father to go along with them to open their bank account. That's only 50 years. You know, that's been a long time. And I don't think we appreciate the fact that this has been a long struggle. And then we sort of, in their perception, come swanning along at the end and go, well, we want all the rights that you've got. Thanks very much. And in their world, you know, we're just taking away again as what they see as men who dress up. And okay, fair enough. Let's start there. Let's have that conversation.
And because we're a broad church, there are people across that spectrum who, from gender fluid, cross-dressing, transvestite people, whatever language you want to use, historical, who do it for identity reasons or for expression reasons or for fetish reasons. And again, we're such a broad church that we rebranded the word trans or transgender to mean lots of different things.
Yeah, turning nothing.
Everybody gets caught up in everybody else's description, and that's where confusion arises. And I can hear that the judge this morning talking about we couldn't have a trans woman with a gender recognition certificate who looked like a man in women's spaces. It's like, well, okay, we're conflating the whole thing there.
Of course.
But it comes down to perception.
Yeah. And never mind trans mask people, just because they don't have penises, they look more alive. Some of the trans mask people are fantastic. I mean, they're just, you know, broad shoulders.
I've met some trans men with penises, I'm afraid. I've been there. I mean,
of course.
And they're keen to show it off and go, look what I've got.
Yeah. And they're allowed in the female toilets. And it's not like we've got the third option, because of course now what we're talking about, so we're back in bathrooms again. Let's get off that subject. You know, I was in London in the Royal Exchange. You probably know that lovely place. You go down to the loos down there, everything's just non-gendered. And you just go into the toilet or, you know, whatever the Americans say, bathroom. I've never understood, because I'm from the North, I've never understood the concept of a bathroom, because a bathroom is a place you go for a bath, and a toilet is a place that you go to the toilet. Call me old-fashioned.
Well, they call them restrooms as well, don't they? Restrooms, yes. Bathrooms. I mean, yes. I go to the loo.
Yeah.
I go and spend a penny.
Yeah. So I think there's going to be interesting challenges. I think there's going to be, as you say, there's going to be many different people who consider themselves leaders in the trans community, as it were, who are going to get out there and going to say stuff. It's going to be not coordinated. It's going to be all over the shop. It'll be a shame, but I do think some traditional corporate change management would actually help this and would allow things to move forward. And at the same time, you've got an organization like the charity I work for, who's not political, doesn't have, that's why we have trans voices, so we can campaign and be political, but they're just supporting trans people, many hundreds of members who are going in, needing support with trans issues, well-being, safety, dealing with hate crime, thinking about challenges with the National Health Service, for God's sake, you know, because we know that's another area of exclusion, you know, and I think I think there are organizations to just get on under the surface and just deliver something. And then you've got people who want to make a song and a dance about it. And I think the good thing to know is that for trans people is we're not alone. And there are some really good trans support charities out there. Consider Arrows to be good, obviously. But there's others. And you should reach out to them and you can talk to them and have a chat. And then say, okay, so that's one thing, that's support and safety and all that sort of stuff. And then the next thing is, right, okay, so what we're going to do about this? And I think that's the part where people have got to be standing up and saying something. And I think that's the process of change, isn't it? You've got to have places where it sort of bubbles along. And then you've got to have people who are pushing envelope, who are out there saying things. And you've done this in GB News. You stand up and say stuff. It's not popular. And people throw all sorts of insults at you and, you know, they do to me. And hey, yeah, I'm a trans woman and I'm proud to be. And I've always said I am. I've never pretended to be a cisgender woman.
Certificated woman now. I'm a certificated woman.
Well, congratulations.
That's the difference. The judge told me I'm a certificated woman, not a biological woman. So
exactly.
I've got a new title.
Yeah, congratulations. You need a badge.
Yeah.
You have to carry that around now to the toilets.
I'll get my gender recognition certificate and I'll frame it and I'll keep it in my pocket just in case. I'm a certificated woman.
Yeah. And I think, do you know what? It's interesting that because it does beg the question of how they're going to check this stuff out, because I do have this idea that we're going to have a new employment strand of gender in a toilet police who are going to be standing there saying, now there's a special test I'm going to give you to see whether you're a crossdresser, a transvestite, gender fluid, or a cis woman. It's like, it's hilarious, isn't it? So we already see the people being called out in the States.
You're going to swap my cheek with a brush, and then you're going to DNA test it. And then, you know, and then by the time you've done that, I've already peed and washed my hands.
Down his leg. You know. This is all good stuff. But, you know, it's the trans community has had these challenges many, many times, and it's adapted and it's grown and it's, you know, it's like weeds. It pops up through the cracks in the pavement. And we're not going away as a community, but we might have to be a bit more smart about how we operate over the next period of time. And it's clear that this Labour government aren't going to be particularly interested in us, and they're going to use us the same way as the Tories did last time around. And so we've got
already,
to deal with
they've
that.
They've already started talking on the news today about how we fully support the judgment. We knew they were right. And
of course.
You think, well, yeah, everyone's throwing us under a bus right now. And so,
So we've got to be
clever.
We'll
see what happens when trans people are being discriminated against under the protected characteristic of gender reassignment. We'll start seeing some cases where trans people start winning back and limiting the... all this rhetoric, you know, about banning me from sex separated spaces like hospital wards. I think last time I went to hospital, they looked at me, scratched their head, and put me in a private room. And I thought, well, okay, segregate me and put me in a private room every day of the week. Yeah, give me my own telly. That's go for it. You're not having any complaints from me. So is that what you mean? You want to make me happier by putting me in a private room? That's fine. That's good.
It did make me laugh dealing with the level of sophistication from some of this. I was reading an article on LinkedIn about the guy who didn't want to be subjected to the TSA screening process because apparently the TSA screening process makes you gay. So what he'd prefer is to be patted down by a male operative. And I did chuckle. I think, I don't know if you've seen the irony of what you just said there, but you'd rather have a man cup your testicles than actually just go through a screening process. So this is what we're dealing with. We have to be smart. We have to look after ourselves and look at each other for the next period of time. And then things will, because we can't see what the world's going. We can only do a risk analysis and say it is the case that very, very powerful organizations, you know, outfits, political institutions are moving against us. And when it's expedient to go the other way, they will. And, you know, it doesn't help that we've got West Streeting in the Ministry of Health, but we have. You know, we know things are going to be getting tough, but that doesn't mean we can't do stuff about it. And certainly in the charities I've worked for, what's been fascinating is the degree to which funding organisations still currently are on our side. It's still the case that arts organisations are still on our side. It's still the case that you can get jobs where you can get jobs. I mean, there is discrimination against trans people. I've done that thing where I've applied for a job, an identical, the same job with the same CV, but the word trans on one and a boy name on the other one. I've got an interview as one and not as the other. So, you know, it's there. But then that also can be just about AI and rubbish as well that goes on in the world. And I think we've got to just say, We can only control the old state stuff that we can control. And that's what's inside of our, you know, between our two ears. And we can get our royally bent out of shape about all this. Or we can actually say, look, we need to be resilient. We need to be cute. We need to stick together. And then we need to think about what we're going to do running for, how we're going to cope and adapt to this new world until we've got a chance to change it. And once we change it, it'll be different again. It may be worse. It may be better. We just don't know.
And as you said, control the controllables. And if it's outside of your control, you have to work out how you can adapt around it and cope with it and stay resilient and stay strong. Just don't burn all your energy up on re-entry. You ought to save some for the landing.
Yeah. Well, I've spent many years as a psychologist working with people and building resilience. You know, I do see a lot of, huge amounts of resilience in our non-community, as it were. But I also see a lot of victimhood and victimization as well in the community. And understanding that role of choice and controllability and such like is really important. And understanding about how to ask for help and help and helping and asking people how to help you think if you don't know how is really important as well. Because you don't need to suffer alone with things like the effects of anxiety or depression and such like. Some of it needs to be sorted out, and that works. And that works in a work setting as well. You know, organizations need to be more resilient and think of different ways to being that way. And need to be more adaptable and think more. I mean, there's a massive crisis coming to the world of work soon, according to all about AI. And as trans people, we should be thinking a lot about that because many of us are in that community, could do something about that. There's going to be a lot of seismic change hitting the UK over the next 20 years, maybe over the next two.
Yeah. I sincerely hope, as a woman, as a certificated woman, no less, that we do start focusing on what matters to women, and that is safety and not experiencing some of the sexist behaviour we get all the time. And I really would like some of these charities who purport to be for women to actually start tackling the real shit and challenges that are out there. And that's predatory men, often in a family environment, looking at people in positions of power and responsibility who are adversely affecting women's opportunities in the workplace. Sexism exists. Disparity in pay and reward in sport and other sectors. That's where we want to put the effort in. And 0.5% of the population who are just getting on with their lives are not a threat. So let's hope that we start actually starting to call out people who are trying to bang on about trying to save women. And actually, what are you doing? Really?
We should be talking about that. We should be talking about health and safety for women and girls because we are women and girls. And we should be part of that debate, not being seen as the threat. You know, the vast majority of rape is from people you know. I mean, those statistics have been well borne out over the years, very well documented, very robust. You know, bumping into a stranger in a toilet wearing a wig is unlikely to be the source of your most extreme discontent. It's like the, I don't know if you're familiar with Jon Stewart's work. I remember in the States, I think he's on The Late Show or whatever it is, sitting down with one of the anti-trans campaigners and saying, why are you stopping drag shows? And they're saying, well, drag shows are very, you know, harmful to children. So he said, okay, that's really interesting. What's the number one source of harm for children in the US? And the person looked at him and said, you're going to say guns, aren't you? And he said, of course I'm going to say guns, because there have been 4,500 deaths from guns and zero from watching a drag show. And it's exactly the same in our world. So it's not about that. And that's the thing we've got to figure out. It's not about that. It's not about toilets. Toilets are just the thing that's the gathering point. It's something else. And that's the bit we've got to get
It's not about prisons. It's not about children. It's not about this. It's not about the other. It's all about, it's playing find the lady with the cards, isn't it? Don't look at this hand. Look at this hand. That's what it's all about.
Isn't it
the control of the masses?
Fox News has, whenever there's a positive story about Donald Trump, they have positive story about Donald Trump. Here's the stock market. It's this, it's that. He's jumping up and down. Negative story about the stock market. Transgender athlete. That's the headlines. And it's just, we have always been the dead cat, haven't we? Rishi Sunak, Boris Johnson. We've always been, let's just roll out a transgender issue. You know, let's get that very tall swimmer. I forget that their name. There you are. Sharon Davies straight on the scene, flipping X, right into war. Sharon Davies. And you know, good. And of course, what we have to do is not just let ourselves be radicalized by the radicalized others. And that's about just staying sane in this world. And I do think that's part of our job, isn't it, as elders, is to be saying, we've been through this before. You know, I've sat on and board meetings and takeovers and such like, and mergers and acquisitions, where two sides have been literally yelling, screaming, inches away from each other's faces, pointing about the punch people in the faces, and you can talk people down from that. And this situation of ours can be dealt with. It just can.
I don't want to be an elder. I want to be a youngster again.
Sorry, you're an old, certificated woman, and be proud of it.
Yay.
But you're younger than me. You're younger than me. So I'm still looking at you thinking, you youngsters. So that's good, isn't it?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, you like that.
Yeah.
You are, I was talking to earlier.
Yeah, that's good. I'm back on again.
Yeah.
I'm only 25 in my head.
Yeah. No, I do think with everything, this is about what's in your head. For me, I'm always optimistic. I always think there's no need for us to start running for the hills and, you know, all moving. Well, don't move to Spain, because that's not so great. All moving to Norway or wherever it is where we're accepted. This is a good country. It's relatively free. It's relatively benign. It's about what we do with it. So, you know, let's get together and sort it out.
Yeah. And I mean, the grass is never greener. The grass is just grass.
Yeah.
There's always been a cow's shit on it somewhere, you know, whatever it may be. You just got to make do with what you've got. And you can keep looking over the fence. You can keep wishing and wanting. But the reality, and people, I often say to people when they say to me, should I transition? I said, well, what's in it for you? What's the objective? You know, if you're looking for a greener grass, a better life, that's not what it's about. The ultimate aim is for life to be ordinary and boring and just like everybody else's. If that's what you're looking for, and that's what's missing in your life, ordinary and boring, yay. Welcome to my club.
So I was chatting online to someone and said to me, oh, it must be great wearing tights all the time. I said, really? Really? Do you know? I mean, you've obviously not done it because it's not become it's a massive sexual fetishization thing for them. And that's the problem, isn't it? People look at this and think that we're like that. And we don't think like that anymore, because this was never about fetishization. It's just been about finding out who we are. Identity is really fascinating, isn't it? People get it because everybody understands the concept of identity. So, for example, you live on the South Coast, don't you? And you'll know people who support Portsmouth and some very quietly support Southampton at the moment. And there are people, and I get the same thing up here in Newcastle and Sunderland, is rivalry, you know. Mm. And, you know, you'll have people in Portsmouth who won't have red stripes in the house. And there'll be massive fallings out between the family. And if you support them, and they identify so strongly with that club, they are, I am Portsmouth through and through. You'll hear them saying that.
Well, the song is Portsmouth Till I Die. You know,
Till I Die.
You chant it on the terraces, yeah.
Yeah. And it was one of the things, I did some work with Southampton Football Club. Yes, you may not like them, but I remember them saying to me that if they hear hate speech or victimisation or one of their supporters who are in their fan clubs committing hate crime or offences like that, they lose their ability to come to the football club, because that's the bit they care about. And I thought, you know, that's a really positive thing. But people get that. You know, I was in Australia 3 years ago and I met someone and he said hello to me in some strange context. And I said, oh, where are you from? He said, I'm Welsh through and through. That's identity. I'm Welsh. How long have you lived in Australia? Oh, I've been here since I was 16. How old are you now? I'm 57. And you're still Welsh? Oh, yes, I'll always be Welsh. Till I die. And you see, people understand identity when you start telling them, oh, yeah, I get that. Oh, but didn't I just choose that? Well, yeah, but it was more than that, wasn't it? You became it as well. Oh, yeah, that's right. People choose that. And of course, what happens is, you know, people choose their jobs, right? And how many people have you bumped into? Men, IT people. I'm a man, I'm an accountant. It's the second thing to say. Or a man, I'm an actuary. And then they lose their job and they completely lose that sense of identity. They lose that sense of who they are. People get that. They understand it. I've been a mum all my life. I'm a mum. Kids grow home. What am I? Ooh, thank goodness I'm a grandmum. So you get about this idea of identity is at the kernel of who we are. So why doesn't it just click over to the last piece? And I know it's much deeper than the others. People get it, don't they? Once you start explaining identity, I've never explained it. And people go, no, I don't believe in identity anymore. Because they'll say, well, you know, there's a bunch of nurses in front of you. I'm a nurse. I'll always be a nurse. I want to be a nurse. Would you like to be a doctor? No, I want to be a nurse. I'm a nurse. I'm a nurse. I've always been a nurse. I always wanted to be a nurse. Here I am. I'm a nurse. I celebrate. Okay. Sure, you don't want to be a kind of doctor with a parents. No, I'm a nurse. Because that's who I am. And that's what it's all about. And I think it goes to culture in organizations. It goes to charitable in organizations. It goes to who we are. Who we are is who we are. And you can't really do much about it until it's taken away from you. There's the thought.
Because identity is all wrapped up in belonging, isn't it? Because, you know, that being Welsh, you're part of a Welsh community. That identity is all caught up in that sense of self, who your communities are, who your echo chamber is, your affinity group. I mean, you talk about IT, and I spent a large chunk of my life, 25 years, with people labeling me as an IT guru, as an IT expert, as IT this, and the IT rocket scientist. But it was never an identity that I was proud of. It was always something that I thought,
exactly.
I don't want to be known as the IT person. And so it made me realize the difference between identity and labels. You give me a label, how I see myself. And when I shed that IT person label and sold my business 10 years ago, it was easy to let go because it was caught up in how other people saw me, but it wasn't caught up in how I saw myself. Yeah, my new identity is a professional speaker, educator, trainer, whatever you want to do in the EDI space. And being labeled with the trans identity, it's not a label that I resonate with. Yes, if you want to tick some boxes, yes, I'm trans. Yes, I'm a woman. Therefore, tick, tick, I'm a trans woman. Fine, great. Logically, it makes sense. But it's not something I want to be all my life. It's that label stuck on my chest all the time. So, yeah, it's working out who you are.
I get it. I mean, I was working in, I think you know, as a speaker as well, and a consultant, and I was working, I lost 100 grand's worth of revenue last year just because I used to work in Africa. And then suddenly I couldn't work in Africa anymore. And, you know, that's just speaking revenues from 1 year. And it's like, well, that's gone. And then when people ring us up now and say, oh, I'd like you to come and talk. Oh, yeah, what do you want to talk about? Change management, culture, leadership, activity. No, being trans. So, okay, right.
I know. It's like, is it paranoid? Marvin the paranoid android, you know, brain the size of a planet, and you want me to clean the floor or something. It's like, it's almost like, hang on a minute, I've got this big brain, I've got all these ideas, I've got all this oomph. You want me to talk about being trans? Okay.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah.
Well done.
I know. I get that all the time. I mean, it's luckily, it's sort of interesting, but, you know, it's not that interesting. I mean, I was in Naples and Florida the other day and last week for 2-3 weeks ago for my holidays, and it was not a pleasant experience. And I think it's going to be a differently unpleasant experience as life rolls on. But, you know, it's not, like I said right at the beginning, I probably haven't talked enough about what's more interesting than being trans other than being just ranting. But, you know, it is the least important thing about me. I remember one of my colleagues in BR saying exactly that, you know, that one of their kids has said the least important thing about me is that I'm trans. It's true, because we're not defined by our transness. That's just a really small part of who we are. And once that's achieved, you know, there's that thing, isn't there, in the transition journey. It's like a change management thing. The old idea of change management is you have this, if you have something that's frozen, you unfreeze it, you refreeze it again. And sometimes that's part of the trans journey, isn't it? You're something, you transition and you become something else. But you don't realize that's just the beginning of it, because that's done now and it's finished. You're not defined by your transness and the journey you've been on. It's just a small part of who we are. Like everything in life, you know, otherwise we wouldn't have any potential to change. I mean, it's like if we've got a member of staff who comes in and says, I can't do Python coding. They say, well, that's it then. That's you doomed. That's the end of you. Because it sort of precludes the idea that we have potential and can learn.
Yeah, you see, you can. You just got to get ChatGPT. You got to use the
DeepSeek.
The O3 high. And I write Python code now. Is it Jibe? Is it Jibe coding, they call it, where you basically ideate into pseudocode, and you just get, and Canva just released a Canva AI, which writes brilliant code. I've just developed a whole load of stuff. Okay, it's not like push the button, it just happens. You've got to massage it a lot. But I've created two great things. One is an LGBT history of 200 years of LGBT history as a timeline map, which I did in Canva AI and then refined it. I've got like 130 timeline entries with drill downs and clicks and all this kind of thing, which is going to be just ready for Pride Month to share with the world. And I designed all that in Canva AI with ChatGPT backup on the end of it. And you can develop stuff now. You haven't got to be a Python expert. You've just got to be a business analyst, probably is where we go back to. If you're a business analyst and process analyst, you could then fill the gaps in to get the code to do the black box stuff, and you just hook the black boxes together, input, output.
I was doing an interim CEO role because I do spend a long time doing that now. And I was working with a specific type of architecture firm. I don't want to say too much about that because they're very famous. And I said to them, because I was doing this work a couple of years ago, I said to them, so what about AI in your business? And they said, AI will never affect us. And I said, okay. I said, well, what you could do is you could maintain that view, say nothing about it, sit down with AI software people and be the first people to market, or you can do nothing. And I was just online the other day. I had my phone. I just took a picture of my garden. I know this is landscape design rather than landscape architecture, but I took a picture of my garden and I've got 17 designs with levels on the back of my ChatGPT stuff and DeepSeek or whatever on Perplexity. All these different AI tools are out there and they're all giving you results you never knew. What matters now is that ingenuity of understanding the question you want to ask. That's going to be the key skill, isn't it? It's that originating need. You know, again, as a therapist, counselor, all that sort of nonsense, go to ChatGPT and just type in, hey, ChatGPT, I can't say it. I don't feel so good today. And they'll say, oh, I'm sorry to hear you're not feeling so good. And especially if you switch the voice on, you've got a counselor. All these non-skilled jobs are going. And it's time that we all woke up to the real big seismic changes which are going on, which our community could be a real big part of if only we could get our head out of the toilet paste. There's a brand.
I appealed a parking charge the other day with ChatGPT. I took a photograph of the front and back page, fed it into ChatGPT and said, look, what causes can I contest this parking charge? But they went, under the British Code of Parking, whatever, you're entitled to a 10-minute overstay, which seems fair and reasonable. You are 41 seconds over the 10 minutes. I think that's a good cause to go back to say it'd be a waste of the court's time to take this to court because of de minimis or whatever the legal term is. And that 41 seconds is kind of like so trivial. They should deny it. If they don't, it's worth appealing. I thought, go on, I'm going to go for this. So yeah, it allows you to have this empowerment. I mean, a bit like YouTube gave us the idea of how to fix a car. You find the bit you want to do and YouTube shows you all the bits. Another story with ChatGPT is I've got rid of Sky TV. They were just charging way too much money a month. I thought, hang on a minute. I could do FreeSat. My TV's got FreeSat errors on it. I could plug it in. And I just asked ChatGPT, can I just do this? And they went, no, your Samsung will not like the LNB, which is the module on the satellite dish that Sky Q has, because it has a different frequency or different characteristic. You need to swap out the LNB for one that is supported by your telly. I went, okay. So I said, how do I do that? Take a photograph of the LNB you've got. I went, right. I can see what you've got there is definitely Sky Q. It's not the one you need. I recommend you go to Amazon and buy one of these. I went, okay, I've got that. So now on my telly, what do I do? It says, you need to go to this setting, into this tuning, select that and do this. And it says, if you want to get hold of Far East satellite, you need to add this one in as well. I coach myself. I'm now a satellite engineer. We joke about the film The Matrix in trans circles about being the kind of our allegory, if you like. But that idea of plugging a module in to fly the Apache helicopter, the AI can now upskill us rapidly at the point you need that information.
And of course, if we're 6, 7, or 8, we're not even thinking this is remarkable. We think it's remarkable because do you remember dial-up modems?
Oh, yes.
Do you remember that noise?
The sad thing is I could tell you what baud rate and what error correction the modem negotiated. I go, I've got 14,400 there. That's a good one. Okay. Or, that's a 5,600 connection. That's how sad I was. I knew the negotiated speed based on the noise.
I could sing it and play it back to you. So there you go. You sing, we'll have a little.
it was like a neighing donkey, wasn't it? That's connected. Brilliant.
Well, there you are. So there we are. We've come round to the circle where we said, this is what we wanted to do. We want to empower young people to get on and do it. And I think AI is the way it's going to happen. I think there's going to be such seismic changes over the next 20 years. If we don't have a war, which is entirely part of the risk management of the next 4 to 5 years, so that's entirely likely to happen. But if it doesn't, I think we're going to have some, it's going to be a very interesting world. And we've only got another 40 or 50 years in front of us. So, you know, it's going to be a challenge.
I hope. Yes.
Now we do biohacking and it's all written down what you need to have and you get your butyrate and sort your microbiome out. You know, it's all this stuff.
And my probiotic yogurts for breakfast.
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
As long as you don't buy the main brands because they're worse for you than having none. That's the challenge of all this stuff.
I'll ask ChatGPT later and what it reckons.
You should do. Listen, no, you should really watch out for some of the supermarket type stuff and anything off Amazon. I used to have a little alternative therapy unit in Port Solent years ago, which you'll know is around the corner from you because I used to live on the South Coast, which is why I manage a charity on the South Coast. And I remember we used to sell CBD way before the time it was popular because I've always been at the bleeding edge of thinking. And Amazon did a test of all their CBD and Holland & Barrett did. And at the time of the 16 products, none of their product had CBD in it. Is that amazing? Just makes you wonder, who'd have thought, eh? Who'd have thought?
There's
American companies
out
making
there.
Rash claims.
Make claims. And
I love the TikTok thing with all the Chinese people saying, this is how we make your designer stuff at the moment. That's a very good TikTok meme. I like that.
Yeah.
It's the future, Joe. It's the future.
Young people are the future. And I'm envious because I'd love to have another go around. I'd love to have another go around and think, actually, what I know now, wow, what I could do with that.
Yeah.
But hey.
And people say, I wouldn't want to be back in this town because of the social media. Thinking, no, I'm very happily. I'll be 16 again. I'll swap. You can be 63.
No, what I know now. Let's have another go. Give me another roll of the dice. I could do this one more time.
What single thing would you do differently or change?
Like myself today. So I'm one of these people that if I changed something in the past, I wouldn't be me today, who I am today. My family, my friends, my children. Yeah, you know, that butterfly wing, that changed. But things that I would do differently is not smoke or ever start smoking. And I would recognize how alcohol impacted my life negatively and my weight management. I think those are the health, but all those three things I mentioned are health related, not ambition or capability. So I think being more mindful of my body from an earlier age. That's probably, it's not regret. It's just, if I was doing it again.
It's learning.
I've learned in my late 50s that this is how I should be. So I think be more health conscious, be more aware of my body because I want it to last a long time. And by not looking after it, I've potentially stunted some of my capability. I might even start flossing just because my hygienist keeps telling me I should floss every time I go and see her. And
are you talking the dance or the teeth?
My teeth. Well, floss my teeth. Floss my teeth.
Not flossing the dance.
So I don't get long in the tooth, as I keep getting told. I'm long in the tooth there.
That's terrible.
But apart from that, I would, don't sweat the small stuff. Believe in yourself. Believe in the kindness and warm heart of other people. And keep being the best you can be. I think those are, if you can live by those sort of mantras, then life is what you make it. That's a really privileged thing to say, isn't it?
Why not? You've earned the right to be privileged because you've put all that work in before today.
Yeah. Well, it's just time served, I guess.
Yeah. It's not luck. I don't believe in luck. I think it's all about what you've done before today to make that butterfly wing thing come together.
Yeah. Well, we are a product of our environment and our history, aren't we? So we are who we are.
We are. Are we done?
Yeah, we're done, Gillian. Tell us how to get hold of you. Yeah?
Well, you can send me an email at gillian@transvox.co.uk if you want to do that. You could send me an email at gillian@supportyou.org.uk or gillian.russell@beyondreflections. Or you can just go on LinkedIn and just look for Gillian Russell, FRSA, and another one of those FRSA people. And send me a LinkedIn, have a chat, send me something contentious. Let's write an article together. Come and be a podcast guest. Come and volunteer. Come and be contentious. Make a difference in the world, and I'll help you get there.
Wow. Gillian, it's been a shit show of a day so far, but you've lightened it up. The sun's come out. It's been great having a chat. So thank you so much.
Take care. You'll be good.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. today's discussion struck a chord, consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.